When Yaakov Avinu speaks about Shimon VeLevi, he says, "Arur apam ki oz ve'evrasam ki kashasa, achalkeim biYaakov ve'afitzeim biYisrael." So you'll notice that achalkeim, he uses the word Yaakov, and afitzeim, which is a synonym, I will disperse them, I will spread them around. He uses the word Yisrael. So Rashi comments specifically about that nekuda. And he says as follows: Achalkeim biYaakov, Afrideim zemizeh, Shelo yehei Levi b'minyan hashvatim, v'hareihem chalukim. It's very interesting. This Rashi has nothing to do with what I want to say, but I just want to make a comment. What Rashi is saying here is that the pirud is not just geographical, but is also in the lumdus. But there's something much more profound, because Levi and Shimon were both dispersed in a lumdus sense. What do I mean by that? I mean, Levi has no chelik v'nachla im Yisrael, so by definition, al pi din, he's mufrashu mufrad from everybody else, including Shimon, of course. But Shimon is also dealt a blow, ki'ilu, because his chelik was subsumed under the chelik of Yehuda, and he's always an offshoot of Yehuda. He doesn't really have an identity of his own. And the biggest haychacha to that, of course, is the Birchas Moshe Rabbeinu in the Zayis HaBrocha, where Shimon is not mentioned. So you have two different ways of kind of sublimating, subsuming Shimon and Levi. So it isn't just that they're apart one from the other. It's that their whole mahus has been kind of like severed from everybody else, each in his own way. But then Rashi says as follows: Dova achel, ein lecha aniyim v'soiferim umelamdei tinoikos elo mishimon kedei sheyihyu nefoitzim. There are no greater impoverished teachers you're talking about soiferim umelamdei tinoikos. Apparently, historically, from day one, these people had a tremendous struggle for parnasa. They had a very great difficulty making ends meet. And which is really very remarkable, because the Maisa, for a nation that holds Talmud Torah in such esteem, why should it be bedavka that those people who teach your children should have such a difficulty? And it's almost like that's the klola, you know, that would logically we'd expect that maybe they would make the most money, because we're machshavit to such an extent. But you know, it goes ma'ani b'chinom, afato b'chinom, and the rest is history. So, but the klola, says Rashi, is they'll aniyim v'soifim lamdetinoikos, and they don't find a parnasa locally, and they're always wandering from one place to the next. So there's the afitzeim b'Yisrael, and there's the achalkeim b'Yaakov. So Rashi comments on this: v'shifto shel Levi, aso'o mechazer alagronos, the trumais ulemaisrois nosan loy tefutzasai. Since he has to go from place to place to be mechazer ala gronois, so he has him also wandering around. So the two wanderings, the wandering of Shimon and the wandering of Levi, the expression is achalkeim biYaakov va'afitzeim biYisrael. It would seem to me that you have to explain why is the word Yaakov mentioned, and in the very same pasuk the word Yisrael is mentioned. So I think the answer is that what Rashi's saying is that he's telling me that the Shevet of Shimon will always have a blow to their dignity, that they are impoverished and they have to seek out employment wherever they can find it, as Soifrim Umalamde Tinoikos. They're doing Avodas Hashem, and nevertheless they're suffering so much. Ein lecha bizayon gadol mizu. However, Shevet Levi, they also have to worry about their parnasa, because they are dependent upon others. But everyone understands that Levi, and you see in the Psukim, Uvah Levi ki ein lechelek v'nachla, the Ribbono Shel Olam says you have to take care of the Levi, you have to worry about the Levi. So the Levi is also suffering, but his suffering comes from a makom mechubad of being dependent exclusively on Hashem, as the Rambam says in Shemitah V'Yovel, that they don't have a chelik neither in the Nachla of Eretz Yisrael nor in the Biza, because they have to focus on the Hashem as the provider exclusively. By them, Bitachon is almost a natural instinct because of that, and their connection to Hashem is therefore greater. But it's much more than that. It's the station, the esteem, is reflected in the mitzvah of Vikidashtai as well. So a Kohen and even a Levi, in many halachas, has a kedima which, because it is over a Yisrael, grants him a certain chashivus which Shimon does not have. So the word Yaakov and the word Yisrael could very well be interpreted as referring to Yaakov vis-a-vis Shimon and Yisrael vis-a-vis Levi. Because the word Yisrael is always, when you're speaking about the descendants of Yaakov, in their glory, in their greatness. And the word Yaakov represents the Metzias of Klal Yisrael, mostly in Golus. And Yaakov is the Av of Golus, of course, spends so much of his life in Golus. And even the years of tranquility are in Golus, and doesn't find rest in Eretz Yisrael. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva kofetz alav roigzeh shel Yosef. This is a word, a name, that implies a struggle with the Sar shel Esav, where there is some measure of damage. You know, and Yaakov requires, the word Yaakov itself requires, so what does that mean? What does Yaakov mean? So if you look in the beginning of the parasha, so the name Yaakov is simply because he's holding on to Esav's heel. But the way Esav interprets it, Hachi Karoshmo Yaakov Vayakveni, Vayakveni means you go roundabout. You employ a ruse. You use an ambush. When you can't go straight, you go around. Now, who can't go straight? If somebody is an enemy, and the enemy is vast, and the enemy is powerful, I know that a frontal attack is suicide. So what do? I have to confront him and I have to fight him. So how do I fight him? Guerrilla warfare. That's Vayakveni. It's the same thing with the brachas and the Bechaira. But the name Yaakov reflects that matzav of Klal Yisrael, where when confronting the enemy and being outnumbered in so many different ways, you have to use your wits about you, and you have to, you know, you have to go out of your geder to achieve what you cannot achieve directly. Whenever you do something indirectly and roundabout, there's a certain element of sheker involved. You know, every ambush is a sheker, because people assume A and you're creating B. This is sheker. A frontal attack is not sheker. You have your tanks, I have my tanks, and then we just unload. And whoever's a better sharpshooter with his rifle is going to kill more people. But it's not sheker. But if you make believe you're going here, or the greatest generals, they have these tactics where they seduce the enemy into thinking incorrectly. So they'll make believe, when you make a lot of bonfires because there are very few soldiers, or you make a big noise because there are very few soldiers, what are you doing? You're creating a sheker, because the emes is one bonfire. The emes is one popgun. So what are you making big noises? The answer is because you have to convince them of an untruth. And that's how you win. So they marshal all their forces to a certain place, which is irrelevant, and then you march into the city. That's the whole idea of warfare, when it's not frontal and direct, is a cheftz of sheker. Used to your advantage, of course. Now, when you use the name Yisrael, that's direct. Kisarisa im Elohim vim anoshim vatuchol. You prevail. Yaakov is the same moment as Sarisa, because he kinoga bekaf yerech Yaakov beheyof ko imo. So you'll notice a remarkable thing, that the promise to Yaakov in the parasha of Vayishlach is a promise is a promise of what? Of a name Yisrael, where the name Yaakov was never taken away. Everybody points out the chiluk between Avraham and Sarah, whose name was changed irrevocably, and the name Yaakov, which was changed to Yisrael only to leave the name of Yaakov. You have plenty of people that are named Yaakov, tens and tens of thousands of them. So why was that the case? Because you need the name Yaakov, because history has not yet reached the point where the name Yisrael prevails forever. And so there will be always the Yisrael name, and there will always be the Yaakov name. There will always be the name that is the Tsar, the great personality who's Kuloi Omer Kavod, and who does not require dirty tricks, does not require ruses, it does not require roundabout. And then there's the Yaakov name, which is the exact opposite. And when push comes to shove, and the survival is necessary, whether it's a spiritual or a physical survival, you have to have the name Yaakov at the ready. And v'hisihi lasecha, not merely because survival is kedai, but because the Ribbono Shlom retains the name of Yaakov. This is the mahalach. Sheker is only sheker if the alternative is emes. If the alternative is a bigger sheker, then the little sheker becomes the emes. And that's really the secret of Yaakov. And that's what happened with Esav. So if you are really deserving of the Bechora, then Yaakov becomes Midas HaEmes. And when you are deserving of the Bracha, Yaakov becomes Midas HaEmes. Even though the achievement of the Bechora and the achievement of the Bracha is dafka through a Yaakov Mahalach and not through a Yisrael Mahalach. Because the alternative to that Yaakov Mahalach is a greater disengagement from the truth, a greater travesty, a larger sheker. The people come to this parsha and they don't have this sensitivity. They end up feeling sorry for Esav and antagonistic to Yaakov. And what's remarkable about Chazal, the Nogea to Yaakov, is that Yaakov is Midas HaTiferes, the merging of Chesed and Gvura, and there is this idea of Yaakov Asher Poda Es Avraham, that the quintessential ultimate personality that the Avos created, the Bechir Sheba Avos, is Yaakov. And Yaakov is understood Titein Emes LiYaakov, Chesed LaAvraham. If Yaakov is Midas Tiferes, he has to be Midas HaEmes. You know why? Because without Emes, there is no Tiferes. The glory of anything is its truth. So the question is, how can you speak about a Yaakov, Dafka, a Yaakov, as the Midas HaEmes? So that's the answer. Yaakov, in its time and in its place, is as much Midas HaEmes as is Yisrael. However, there is one attribute that only Yisrael can have. In other words, even if we accord Yaakov Midas HaEmes to the full, in fact, in its time and place, as much Midas HaEmes as Yisrael, in its time and place, but there will forever be one nafkamina between Yaakov and Yisrael. Because as much as Yaakov is in its time and place Midas HaEmes, it can never lead to Kiddush Hashem. Because what it appears to be on the surface is sheker. And therefore, it's always Yisrael asher b'cha espa'ar. It could never be Yaakov asher b'cha espa'ar. So there's Teferis Yaakov, but Yisrael asher b'cha espa'ar. The reason is simply because espa'ar is Kiddush Hashem. The Rambam in Hilchos Deis, as well as in Hilchos Yisoy De'atayra Perik A, quotes this pasuk. And the Rambam says as follows. In Yisoy De'atayra Perik A, he says, Yesh dvarim acherim shehen bichlal chilul Hashem, v'hu sheyasa osam adam gadol batorah umefursam bachasidu. Dvarim shehabrios meraninin acharav bishvilam. When meraninin here is they gossip about him. They speak behind his back. They talk to one another about the negatives that come from his personality. And look at him, he's supposed to represent Torah and mitzvahs and Avodas Hashem. So what kind of an Eved Hashem is that? And even if the things they talk about are not technically classified as Averos, as a Lav, a Doraisa, or even a Drabonon, Avera, a Chet, Hareza Chilulis Hashem, Kagon Shalokach, Ve'eno no Saint Deme Habekach La Altar. Person has money in his pocket, doesn't feel like paying them now, and they're asking him for the money, and it's not a place which gives on credit. So that's a chilul Hashem. Another example. Person lives a certain kind of debauchery. You know, he goes into the bars, he lives it up with the bums. He's abrupt, he's curt, he's not nice. He's quarrelsome. The more great he is and the greater the reputation he has. And now the Rambam says, what is the positive? Where he ends the words of this next paragraph with Yisrael, Asher b'cha espa'ar. That's the last halacha in Perek Hay of Yisodei HaTorah. The last words of Perek Hay. V'chein, im diktei kechocham al atzmai, v'hoyo diburoi benachas im abrios. V'da'ato me'urevis imoi. He has a common language. He's friendly. He's affable. He's down to earth. He doesn't lord it over them. Mekablam b'sever ponim yofos. V'ne'alav mehem, and even when he is hurt, when they do something to hurt his feelings, einoi olvam, he does not return the favor in kind. He keeps his peace, he doesn't hurt them. Mechabit lohem, v'afilu l'mekilim lo, even people who are mezalzel in his kavod, he gives them kavod. V'nosim v'amunah, and his business activities are with absolute integrity and fidelity. V'lo yarba barichus ame oretz v'yeshivasam. And that's not even enough. He can't appear to be on some, you know, on the top of some pole serving Hashem and irrelevant and unconcerned about his fellow human beings. He's not allowed to be a shmama, you know, a desolation. He has to be part and parcel, because otherwise, how will anybody be able to relate to him and appreciate his greatness and his tzidkus and his avodas Hashem? Ad sheyimtzu hakol mekalsin also, to such an extent does he have to do all of this that everybody adores him and praises him? O avim also umis avim lemaisav, and they want to emulate him. They tell their children, why can't you be like him? Harei zekidish es Hashem for olav hakosuv oimer vayomer li avdi ata Yisrael asher b'cha es pa'ar. The Rambam in Perek Hay of Hilchos Deos, interesting that it's also at the end of Perek Hay, the Rambam speaks, Masou matonu shel tamid chochem be'emes u'be'emuna. Oimer alav lav, v'al hein hein. Medaktik al atzmo b'cheshbon, v'nosein u'mevatel acherim kishiyikach mehem, v'lo yedaktik aleim. When is he medaktik in his business activities? When he owes other people money, and he has to pay others. But he's dafka not medaktik when other people owe him money, and when they have to pay him. Now, as he keeps a set of double books, more chomer for himself and more lenient for others. V'nosein d'mei mekach la'alter. He gives the money right away. Again, he doesn't spell out all the details, but as was presented earlier, ve'eino nase lo orei v'lo kablon v'lo yovo b'harshoa. Mechayiv atzmo b'divrei mekach memka b'mokom shloichiva oise toira. Kedei sheyamod b'diburo v'lo yishaneyu. Even when the halacha says he can be chozer because the mekach was not yet clinched, because the kinyan was not chal, etc., etc., his intentions are his reality. It doesn't matter if the Kenyan isn't chal, if he gave his word. Once he gave his word, that's it. V'im nischaivu lo acherim b'din ma'arich u'mochel lohem u'malve v'chonein v'lo yered l'toch umnus chaveru v'lo yetzer lo'odom lo'olam b'chayav. In his entire life, he shouldn't cause anybody any suffering. Klolo shel dover yiyah min ha'nirdofim v'lo min ha'rodfim min ha'ne'alovim v'lo min ha'ovim v'odom sh'osa kol ha'maisim ha'elu b'kayotze b'hen. All of Hakosuv Oimer Vayomer Li Avdi Ato Yisrael Shrebucha Espa'ar. Interesting. The Perikei in Yisodei HaTorah, Perikei in Hilchos Deos. You know, I was thinking once that the Rambam's redundancy, as it were, it's not really. What the Rambam is saying is as follows. There is a concept of Kiddush Hashem, and then there is the paragon in the eyes of Hashem. And they're really two separate things. They may have the same requirements, but they're two separate concepts. Hashem is waiting to see if somebody can live up to his standards, Ki'ilu. Now let's say that this person was the only person around. Well, of course, if he was the only person around, a lot of these activities couldn't happen because they're all interpersonal, if you look at the list. But imagine that my focus is exclusively on one person, so then there's no issue of Kiddush Hashem or Chil Hashem, because Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem is always measured by what? By your audience of human beings. So when we speak about the Perek of Kiddush Hashem, which starts with Yehori Bal Yavor and goes on and on to Refuah, and finally goes to these Asiyas Mitzvahs or Averos, and the Rambam says that there's a category where you do Averos Peshot Nefesh, that itself is a Chil Hashem, and you do Mitzvahs completely Shem Shamayim is a Kiddush Hashem. But the Rambam then says there's another category of Chil Hashem, Kiddush Hashem, which is measured by your audience, and that is activities of behavior which are either inappropriate for a Talmud Chacham, and people look and say, that's a Ben Torah, that's a Talmud Chacham, what a joke. Or the Kiddush Hashem Shabbai, that the audience says, wow, what an unbelievable person. That is an Eved Hashem. So if you have that, by the Goyim, when you speak about a Jew, the first positive thing that comes to their mind is, they're very smart. It is the first thing that comes to their mind, they're very smart. After that, it's all downhill. The next positive thing, which is of course also negative, is they have all the money. The next one is that they control all the media. And then it just keeps going from there. And finally they say, you better hold your hand in your pocket when you walk by them, because otherwise you won't have your wallet. And they don't mean that you will physically pick their pocket. They mean that you will use your wits to outsmart them and get their money from them. Shalom kahoyge. But this is all missing the point that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants them to think, which is, a Jew is a paragon of virtue. And apparently, with all the anti-Semitism that exists, they may decide to kill you the next day, but they'll still have to admit to that point if your hanhaga warrants it. That's Kiddush Hashem. But that is in the eyes of others. When the Rambam gets to Perek Hay of Hilchas Deyos, the Rambam says the following. It's not just what other people admire and respect. It's the nature of who you are. It's the critical component of being a Jew. So when the Ribbono Shel Olam says Yisrael Shebecha Espa'ar, and you're using that pasuk in Yisaydei HaTorah, you mean, look how hey, he's proud. You see, I told you, this is mine. This is what we can produce with a Torah and mitzvahs. When it comes to Perek Hay of Hilchos Deyos, the Ribbono Shel Olam is not looking for any audience. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm happy with you, because you are who you should be. That's what I gave the Torah to come with. So the incredible nisayon of Golos, besides all the other nisayonos, the nisayonos of assimilation, the nisayonos of starting all over again from scratch, over and over, and all that energy that's required to pick up the pieces, which is an unbelievable amount of energy. Look at Haiti. I mean, you know, it's not pasha. And you know, you build a shul, you build a community, you're there for hundreds of years, and all of a sudden you have to start from scratch. Or you have to rebuild the community that they just destroyed. And they fetter you and bind you and circumscribe you in so many different ways, and you still have to make it. So this is an unbelievable nisayon of Golos. But one of the greatest nisayonos, leaving all of those nisayonos in their place, they are tremendous nisayonos. But there is one other nisayon, which is a nisayon that is the nisayon of Yaakov Avin. And if someone will ask me, when did he get the name Yisrael? So I have a thought here that perhaps might be somewhat original, but I think is rooted in the whole idea of what Yaakov is in all of Chazal. And I'll tell it what it is to you. Al reka, in the context of what I'm about to say. The nisayon of Golos is to use Yaakov only when it is critically necessary, and then, even then, to regret that you cannot use Yisrael. But never, ever to use Yaakov when you can use Yisrael, and to understand that whatever Yaakov can do, but a Kiddush Hashem he cannot create. Because whenever you have to outwit somebody, there's going to be a perception, because no one wants to admit that he's wrong and that he deserves it, and that there would have been a better way if. There's going to be a perception that the person who's doing this is a scoundrel and a thief and a cheat and a liar. And there's no Kiddush Hashem that could come out of it. It's just inherently not possible. Hashem ain't came the name Yisrael. Because when you go B'mei Shorim and you do the right thing, you have to be Mekadosh Shem Shamayim inevitably, even in the eyes of your Sinai. And what happened in Yaakov's case is the following. Yaakov came to the house of Lavan. Lovan bikesh la'akor es hakol. If you'll allow me a play on words, so to speak, Lovan bikesh la'akor es hakol, he wanted to destroy that midas emes and midas teferis. There's a part of the Lovan activity that has to assume that push comes to shove, everybody is corrupt. And I'm entitled to my corruption just as you're entitled to yours. And he puts Yaakov into a position where it is expected of Yaakov on the part of the Rishoyim that they were, all of them, he and his entire Mishpacha, wherever they were, and all of his countrymen, there was an expectation that Yaakov would try in response to the pressure and oppression of a Lavan relationship in business, that Yaakov would become a Lavan in, that the response of Yaakov would be a Lavan response. You try to cheat me, I'll outwit you. You try to cheat me, and I will cheat you even more. You try to cheat me, and I will remember it forever. And this is where Yaakov proves the incredible integrity of a person committed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's Midas Teferis. Midas Teferis is dafka when Yaakov does not have to be Yaakov. So you look at the remarkable thing over here. You have three moments in the Torah which are described in great detail and paint Yaakov in a picture which is extremely negative on the surface. And most people, when they read the Parsha, they get antagonized. They actually get angry at Yaakov. I remember meeting a lady in the street out of the blue, and she comes up and says, "Are you a rabbi?" So I say, "Yeah." So she says, This Jacob, you know, look at what the Torah writes about. He cheats Esav left and right, and then and when he gets to the house of Lavan, he makes this whole trick with the sheep, and he builds himself big flocks at the expense of Lavan, and everybody's admiring him. We are the people of Israel, the sons of Jacob. And she was very upset. She was very disturbed. So I told her the following. I mean, what do you tell a lady in the street? I told her, person's about to be mugged, and you can convince the mugger that a block away you dropped your wallet, and if he runs now to get the wallet, he'll get much more than the $2 that you have in your pocket. Meanwhile, the wallet is in your pocket the whole time, and there is no wallet over there at all. The mugger is stupid enough to listen, and he runs, and of course you run away in the opposite direction, and you save yourself from serious damage and loss. What do you say about that? So she says, "Well, come on, that's not a comparison." I said, "You're right. In Yaakov's case, it was much worse than the mugger." "You're right," I said. "It's not a comparison. Because all you can lose is maybe life and limb. And Yaakov, it's the whole of Klal Yisrael that's at stake. The whole of the world is at stake." I don't know if she was happy or not. Can't always win. But the point that I made gave her pause, because she, you know, wait a minute. It's not so simple, is it? Now, you have a remarkable thing. What's the difference between those three moments and Yaakov's general hanhaga, which was super impeccable integrity beyond anyone's expectation? In other words, why doesn't Yaakov simply slouch on the job? Why doesn't Yaakov simply take a few sheep for himself? Totally entitled. There wouldn't be anybody that would have any claim against. Lamaisa, he's being cheated left and right. He's not even cheating back. He's just taking what's rightfully his. Person owes me $10,000, and he left the cash register open, and he refuses to pay me. And he's always trying to outwit and outsmart me, and eventually I know that I'm going to work for him for a whole year, and he won't pay me anything at all. But the cash register is open, and I take out my $10,000. Who's going to have any kindness to me? You know, like, Ovid Inish Dino Lenafshin. What's the problem? But he refuses. And not only that, when he goes back, when does he encounter the Sar Shel Esav? And this is what I'm going to tell you, my novel interpretation, if you will. When does he encounter the Sar Shel Esav? He went back. What did he go back for? For the little jars, for the Pachim Ketan. And everybody wonders, what's this business of the Pachim? So the Gemara asks the question. The Gemara says, Tzadikim mamonam chaviv aleim yoser migufam, which is an incredible statement, and sounds like something straight out of Merchant of Venice. Not from Chazal. You know, tzaddikim love money more than their own lives. You know, imagine it blazing that on Times Square. Tzaddikim, the righteous Jews, they love money more than they love their life itself. So everybody, the anti-defamation people start screaming and yelling, what kind of anti-Semitism is that?
And then underneath it says, you know, Talmud Bavli.
So what is the pshat of that Chazal? Lefi she'ein poshtim yedeihem begezel, which is a strange thing. Mamonim chavalem yosim gufon lefi she'ein poshtim yedeihem begezel.
And then there's something else. Right after that Maisa, when he...
What happens? What happens when he goes back? So the pasuk says, Vayikochem, Vayavirem es hanochal, Vayaver es asherlo, Vayivoser Yaakov levado, Vayeyovek ish imo ad alos hashachar. I mean, this ish comes out of nowhere. It's the strangest thing. He remains by himself in the Torah without the slightest hakdoma, without the slightest feeling of need to explain, you know, where did this ish come from out of the blue? And he sees that he can't beat Yaakov. What happens next? He encounters Esau himself. That is correct. In the context of what we were saying, I think every part of these psukim fits perfectly into place.
You see, what happened here is the following.
Yaakov Avinu, in three instances, is using Yaakov, the Yaakov Mahalach, the Yaakov approach, out of absolute necessity. Benogeya the Bechayra, Benogeya the Brocha of Nital Shmaim Shmane Oretz.
Esav, of course, in those two instances,
we said the pasuk earlier, Hachi Karoshmo Yaakov, Vayaakveni Zepamai, and Benogeya his success and his parnosa in the end, when he says that you should take all the speckled and the spotted and all the plain and separate them. And Lavan, of course, thinks that this is an extremely treacherous thing he did, that somehow he managed to increase his flock so many fold. And Lavan thinks that this is some trick up Yaakov's sleeve, that he outmaneuvered. In the entire years that he was working for Lavan, year after year, one year after another, of unbelievable oppression and unbelievable antagonism and hatred and unbelievable thievery on the part of Lavan, Yaakov's response was Yisrael Hashem Chaspar. Not one pen. What was the evidence of that?
So the answer is very simple.
A person who has some measure of integrity is not going to go for huge amounts of money. Nobody is a Bernie Madoff, except for Bernie Madoff. But people, when it comes to the little things, it's very easy to fudge and to obscure that very precise line between absolute emes or anything else. Because the small things are much more easily justified, obviously. Number one, they're not that important. Pachas M'shava Pruta is a person is Moichel. So it's very easy to stretch Pachas M'shava Pruta to $5 or to $10. What's the big deal? That's the first point. What's the big deal? So Pachim K'tanim represent that what's the big deal kind of Kalim. The next point. In small things, it's extremely easy to justify, not just that the balabas won't care if I take it, you know, like the towel in the hotel type of syndrome, but also because he probably owes me at least that many times over. So if you go ahead and you take $10,000, then maybe you're suffering. You know, who says he owes you that? But if you take $50, of course he owes it to me. I'm a very good worker and I'm underpaid. So anything like Pachim K'tanim always has that double excuse, if you will. But Etzem, it's not that big deal. And also, it's definitely true that at least that I am owed.
So I'm not taking anything but my own. That person who is impeccable about Pachim K'tanim, the Pachim K'tanim become more important in their own way as symbols of his virtue,
which he wants to keep for himself and for his posterity. These are the Pachim K'tanim. They in many ways are more important than the Shulchan and the Menorah and the Mizbeach of the Heichal. It's not Pachim K'tanim. And that's what Chazal mean. Mamonam Chaviv Alein Yosem Igufan, there's a certain Kedusha in those Pachim K'tanim which is transcendent, because it represents the ultimate relationship that a Jew can have to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that on account of that relationship he can do the impossible, which is absolute integrity in the face of total treachery. That's what those Pachim K'tanim represented. Not one iota less. And for those Pachim K'tanim, it's kedai to go back. Guess what happens on this site? The wrestling with the Sar Shel Esav says the following. It's true you're in the house of Lavan, but you're Yaakov. And the house of Lavan, it's still your family. And you have to be there because Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to get married and raise your children there. But what will happen in the thousands of years when you're under Esav's thumb and you have all the excuses of Lavan plus, and the question will be your survival? What will happen then? Are you able to encounter and confront the Sar Shel Esav and remain consistent to your vision that you can only use Yaakov when it is critically necessary, but your striving and your intention is always to achieve a Yisrael, because the ultimate tachlis is Kiddush Hashem. As I told you, Or Lagoyim in the time of Golus does not exist. There's no such thing. It's Kiddush Hashem. Or Lagoyim is when you change the world. Kiddush Hashem is when you show the world who you are. It's two different agendas entirely. We cannot change the world. That's Yemei Samashiach. But we can show what it means to be a Jew. That's Kiddush Hashem. So the question is, can you do it, Yaakov? So when Yaakov fights the Sar Shel Esav, just after he went back for the Pachim Ktanim, he goes back to a place where there are Pachim Ktanim which prove his integrity, and then he's tested what happens when you have to struggle with Esav. A mighty struggle. And in Golus, the struggle was Tochnoi Reva Ayam over and over and over again, and we're still struggling with Esav. And every Jew could think to himself, they owe us far beyond anything that they could ever give us. I mean, Lamaisa, my father had a house. What's with that house? So what happens if I find some, you know, Polish entity and steal a couple of $1,000 from them? I'm just taking what is mine. They wiped out my entire family. They stole our Sifrei Torah. They stole our Sfarim. They burnt our shuls. They destroyed not only the fabric of Klal Yisrael, but they destroyed all of the mumminess of Klal Yisrael to the tune of trillions of dollars. So, of course, whatever we'll do will never be compensation. And you can go, if you really want to be desperate, you can go even to America. America saved Klal Yisrael. What do we have against America? And you can start thinking this and that. I don't even want to go in. I said they didn't bomb the railroad tracks, and Roosevelt was not what he should have been. And so on and so forth. If you want to, you can, you know, the mind is capable of all kinds of machshavos, loy tahoris, when it comes to taking money. So what's the difference if I register three people on Social Security when they're all gone, or they never existed to begin with? Or what happens if I take two checks for the same person by giving him two names and two identities? Or what happens if I put a few bodies in the freezer in the nursing home so I can still collect from them as if they were alive? Or who knows what else? It's a drop in the bucket. It's all nonsense. Nobody cares. Everybody else is cheating. And the government owes it for this reason or that reason to me, or to Klal Yisrael at least. And so on and so forth and so forth and so on. That's the fight of the Sar Shel Esav with Yaakov. When you have the midah of Yaakov, can you still produce Pachim Tanim in the encounter with the Sar Shel Esav? Frontal, direct encounter with Sar Shel Esav, who's trying to wipe you out. And you need to use the midah of Yaakov when necessary. Do you stop short, or does that overwhelm you, transform you into a sneaky, thieving? That's the question. The Jew, I mean, that becomes a verb. I will Jew you. He Jewed me. Now how could there ever be such a phrase? How could there ever be a Merchant of Venice?
The Teretz is caricature. But you see, all caricature has to have a foundation.
So the Teretz is because that's how we had to survive. But you see, if we would have created enough Kiddush Hashem when it wasn't necessary to be a Yaakov, it would create a very, very complex tapestry, and it would create a different picture entirely.
Bal Korcham Yanu Ami. That's Kiddush Hashem.
No one has the right to say that in the climate that exists of anti-Semitism, which can lead to the destruction of one-third of Klal Yisrael, it's pointless to attempt Kiddush Hashem, because everything we do or say will be held against us and twisted around. That is not so. It is capable and possible to be a Yisrael. That's what Hashem said, I can't take away the name of Yaakov, but I'm giving you the name Yisrael. And that's what the Sar Shel Esav on his own had to say. And in the morning, he saw that Kilo Yocholo. He cannot make a Yaakov lose his balance and use the midah of Yaakov even when he doesn't have to, and completely wipe out the midah which we now know as Yisrael.
Yaakov didn't let. Yaakov insists on the absolute fidelity and integrity.
And I told you this too many times, that the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Schiras,
as I always say, when it's the last halacha in the series, it's very easy to find.
Here, Perek Hay and Perek Hay, it's also very easy to find. But this is the very last halacha of Hilchos Schiras. So it's very easy to find.
So the Rambam says that there's an obligation of the boss to the worker, there's an obligation of the worker to the boss.
The boss can't cheat the worker, he has to pay him on time, etc. He has to allow him to eat in the middle when he's picking grapes, and all those halachas.
And then he says, in the same way, in reverse, there are obligations that a worker has.
The worker has to work without taking breaks that are not permitted, without violating his contract by wasting time. And then the Rambam says, Vaharaya, they eliminated the fourth bracha in the time of Chazal, of Bikas HaMazon, as important as it was to them. So you could have those few extra minutes to serve your master, to work for your boss, because that's part of your contract, and that's and so on and so forth. But that's math. Person sits there, now he has the internet. The boss walks by, presses a button, goes back to the spreadsheet. Boss walks by to the next cubicle, back to the internet.
What's on the internet?
Sports. V'chulu.
Then the Rambam says something which is infinitely more demanding. The Rambam says that you're also mechuyev lavod b'chol kocho.
You have to give your might and main, all of your energy, all of your capacity. Koach means not just physical strength when you're schlepping a package, but it means your capacity. Kol kocho means your capacity.
So if you're brilliant, you have to use that brilliance.
If shrewd in business, you have to use that shrewdness. Whatever koach is required of you, whatever the job asks of you, that's b'chol kocho. How does he know that? So he doesn't quote a chazal that Chachamim eliminated this or eliminated that. He goes straight to Yaakov Avinu, and he says that Yaakov Avinu, when he was talking about Lavan to his wives, to Lavan's daughters, Rachel and Leah, he says to them, ki b'chol kochi avadati es avichen. I worked for your father with all my strength. And what one might have assumed without the Rambam's psak is a madrega of Yaakov Avinu, which no one is expected to do except maybe lifnim mishuras hadin, because who is compared to Yaakov? So the Rambam says that this Yaakov Hatzadik, he calls him. Remember I told you, he calls him Yaakov Hatzadik. It's a very unusual expression. Never hear Yaakov Hatzadik. Yosef Hatzadik, you hear. Because he was Kovish as Yetzahara. Well, Yaakov was Kovish, a bigger Yetzahara. You know what Yaakov's Yetzahara could have been? That after a love on, I am permitted to do anything I can to get what is mine. That's a tremendous Yetzahara. The Yetzahara of self-righteousness. The Yetzahara of justification.
And in Dine Mominis, in the end, it leads to a corruption of personality, unless
this is something that is ordained by the Ribbono Shel Olam as an absolute necessity, such as the Bechira, the Bracha, and his success. But remarkably, until he reaches that point, he cannot take a penny. Because I can't dictate my success. I'm a Negeya Bedover. It has to be divine. So it has to be something that only Hashem will do for me. I cannot take it simply by going in the middle of the night to the cash register when nobody's looking. It has to be with Rehotim and Pitzolim and Mises and whatever it is. Baruch Hashem, you want to do it, do it. In Yaakov's taking of the Pachim Ktanim and the fight with the Sashel Esav, and then the Ace, he says, I am remaining fast to who I am and to the integrity, and you cannot destroy me, you cannot undermine me, you cannot make me falter. I will not give up my vision of perfect and absolute fidelity to the truth, of perfect and absolute integrity to my work. B'chol koichi avadati esavichem. I'm not going to give that up for anything or for anybody. And under all circumstances, then if that's the case, what is the consequence of that? That even the Sashel Esav has to call him Yisrael. Exactly right. Now you understand what the significance of Lo Yaakov Yikari Shimcha. If you'll take a look at Rashi on that very pasuk, Lo Yomer Od Shehabrochos Ba'olucha Ba'akava Urimiya. They will no longer say that the brachos that you got from Yitzchak, from your father, came to you by ruse and treachery. Ki im b'srora v'gilui pon v'soifcha shakadosh baruch hu nigla alecha b'beis keil v'machlif shimcha v'sham hu mevarchacha v'ani sham ehyeh Odelucha Alehem. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who can only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can really change your name, that's going to happen later, I will be there and testify, and I will admit to it. V'zeh shekosev v'yosha el malach v'yuchol bocha v'yischanin loy. Bocha hamalach v'yischanin loy u'ma'an ischanin loy beis el yimtze'enu v'shom yedaber imanu. Hamtein li ad she yedaber imanu shom. Belo rotza Yaakov. The Malach wanted him to wait till HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it. And Yaakov said, no, no, I want it now. He says, no longer will anyone say that you got it Birimiyah. How come? Elamaisi did get it Birimiyah. The Teretz is because when Yaakov becomes a Yisrael, when it doesn't have to be Yaakov, then even the Yaakov is Yisrael already. In other words, if I can prove that under the worst of circumstances, I can remain true to that ideal, then whatever I do is reinterpreted. And those things which otherwise would have been perceived as treachery are now understood in the light that they were really be'emes from the very outset. But who's going to admit to something like that when they see a person who's essentially corrupt? But when you see a person who's perfect in ways that we can't even imagine, and you realize that he's doing things that are not humanly possible unless he remains totally true to a certain vision, then that is the reason or the mechayev in a very natural way for the observer to say, you know, I misunderstood the ma'aseh of the Bechorah. I misunderstood the ma'aseh of the Bracha. Now I see what it's all about. You had to do it, of course. So not only is there a Kiddush Hashem in the act of B'chol Kochi Avadati Esavichem, but it forces a renegotiation of the whole parsha of Yaakov Avinu. And that even those moments which otherwise would have been a riot to his general personality, you see, he took from the cash register when nobody was looking. That's the same Yaakov that stole the Bechorah and the Bechorah. Don't you understand? But now it's lehefech. If he doesn't take even the pachim ktanim penny's worth, then we have to say to ourselves, wait a minute, so what was going on over there? Oh, he couldn't get it directly, and it was critical to wrest WRESC, to wrest it out of the hands of an Esav. And this was Rivka, and Rivka's understand.
So why does all of this seem like, why is it so important? Because the answer is there are many drushes that talk about Yaakov, many drushes that talk about Esav, and that's where it remains. And that's okay, that's Torah. That's interpretation of Torah. So Talmud Torah, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam. But there are many drushes that are not nogeya to Yaakov and to Esav in ancient history as much as they are nogeya to Chaim Yankel today. I think we fall very short of it for the same reasons that I gave before. And the opportunity for Kiddush Hashem is enormous and is really the agenda that a Jew should have. You know, the agenda that we have a lot of agendas to become Talmid HaChachamim, to say Kriya Shema B'Kavona. I mean, there's a very important agenda, there's no doubt about it. But the most important agenda is Kiddush Hashem. There's no question about it. Because Kol HaNikro L'Shmi V'Lichvodi B'Rosiv Baruch Hu Elokeinu Shebra'anu Lichvodo. Shebra'anu, He created us. Bara Osanu Lichvodo, to do Him honor. To raise the banner of Hashem in the world. And all of the excuses in the world will not be more than what Yaakov Avinu could have availed himself of. And that's why I believe the personality of Yaakov and the nisyonos that Yaakov had in the Maisa of a Simon Labonim sense is what we go through in thousands of years of Golus. And in a certain sense, like if Yaakov could do it, we can do it also. We can make it. If we can rebuild ourselves, we can also remain true to an ideal. And I think that if that would happen, and the manifestations of the opposite are not necessarily heavy duty. As I said, you don't have to be a Bernie Madoff. In fact, Bernie Madoff, as ironic as it sounds, is such a caricature, is such an absurdity, that it really doesn't touch people as much, you know. But the little guy that does that little nonsense thing, that's what I'm talking about. So that's the question of, like, you know, who are you in relation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu being tested over and over and over again. And especially since we have that incredible mental, that cerebral capacity.
that is dafka given to us by the Torah. So the guy says, well, he studies the Talmud, he learns how to be shrewd and manipulative, and then he takes advantage of the rest of the world. So that's something that can't be. It is one thing also that you have to acknowledge if you want to be an Eved Hashem. When the Ribbono Shel Olam said, Lo mirubchem chashak Hashem b'chem ki atem ha-ma'at mikol ha-amim, I think what he was saying was much more than the nation is the smallest nation. He's saying like this, a person can say, what difference can I make? I'm not going to change the guy's perception of the Jew, because I'm just one solitary individual. And they're not going to regain a respect for the Yisrael mensch, as Reb Shamshon Falhirsch called it, the Yisrael mensch. You know, Elohim osas Adam Yashar, Yashar Yisrael. Karasa eshmo Yisrael v'Yeshurun. What is Yeshurun? Yashar. That's his name. That's his madrega. He's straight. Straight as an arrow. So everything is crooked, and they look at the Jew, one caricature after another, one Shylock after another. What difference is going to make one moment of Kiddush Hashem? That's also to think. That's an aveira. It's almost a kfira, I would say. You have no right to say it won't make any difference. So what's the point? For several reasons. Not the least of which is that I have my responsibility, my obligation. It is, after all, a mitzvah to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. So what right do I have to say that I don't have to do it because it won't make any difference? It certainly will make a difference at that moment in that context. Everyone's masking that when the yeshiva bachur gives up his seat for the little old lady, there is a moment of wow. There is a moment of appreciation. Everyone is masking that when somebody drops his wallet because his hands are full of packages, and you find it, you pick it up and you run after them even a block and say, here's your wallet, or you find a wallet in the taxi that you got into from the passenger that was there before and you track him down. Everyone is masking that there's a potential for Kiddush Hashem and that the Kiddush Hashem will happen. But it's much more than that. There's no such thing as anticipating the larger picture. No one is entitled to be global in this sense. You're not entitled. You don't know what the impact of your actions are. Because there's something called Olam Yisrael Yonim, and there is no way that anybody can figure out the significance or insignificance of his deeds. As the Nefesh HaChaim points out very strongly over and over again, actually. So, we have no right. Not because a mitzvah is a mitzvah, and because the impact for the moment is an impact, and because we don't know what the impact is. And you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam impacts upon the world in his way, not in cause and effect, the way we imagine things are happening. So I may think that I'm not making any difference, but from the Ribbono Shel Olam point of view, he may have needed just that one component for the computer to go in that direction for the entire world to change. How does anybody know? I mean, for all I know, one mitzvah's tefillin could make the difference in the world. And of course, the Rambam says you're supposed to always think that the world is chetzio chayiv and chetzio zakai, and anything that you do could turn the world one way or the other. So b'chlav is nothing to talk about. One has absolutely no right to think that my little action is not going to make any difference, because it does make a difference, and it's a mitzvah, and who says it's a little action? Maybe it's a very big action. We are blind to what actions are. So that's really what's going on in the Maisa with Yaakov and Esav, and why it's so incredibly relevant. And the truth of the matter is, I'll be honest with you, if I were running Sy Sims, if I was in charge of a school of business, this would be my first, middle, and last drasha in every class, whether the class is in accounting or the class is in computers, business related activities, statistics or whatever it is, or whether it's in marketing or whatever they do in Sy Sims. Because the Tzad HaShav Shebahem is that business is an unbelievable makom sakon. And when everybody's trying to make the buck, and the goal and the tachlis is the successful business model, we as Jews have an obligation to teach in our business school what the concept of a successful business model is, be'ikar, which is Kiddush Hashem. The money anyhow comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So all of this you know, maneuvering and manipulating and finding the exact right niche and pocket for everything and learning how to do this and how to do that, this is all almost besides the point. And the ikar, which is that it has to be with integrity and fidelity and honesty, is chosim in ha-sefer. And the same thing has to be taught. This has to be taught in every college quiz,
at the beginning and the end of every quiz, and in the middle. Because when it comes to getting good grades,
you will know that there's a problem. Because a person says, I have to get those grades no matter what. And I am competing against all kinds of people. And you know something? A Ben Torah could even convince himself even more than anything.
I know that I have enough kishrin that if I studied enough, and if I had the whole day to study like those college guys elsewhere,
believe me, I could do better than them on the LSATs and better than them on the MCATs, and I could ace my classes one after another. But nafshichoshka batoy, what do you want from me? I'm learning a whole day, and I got to go to class. So I have a little bit of a problem. So how do I solve my problem? I know I have the smarts anyhow, and I'm going to make a good lawyer. There's no question about it. I mean, the Talmud is teaching me how to be a lawyer anyhow. I don't need any law school classes. That's nonsense. Everybody knows that the Jews make the best lawyers, and maybe doctors too. We have an ancient heritage, and the Ramban, and the Rambam. So I'm going to even the odds. I'm not taking advantage of anybody, but if I need to learn, I need a little bit of a, you know what. So how do I manage that? So, I get the shekup.
You can figure out all kinds of things.
You can put on the inside of his yarmulke and scratch his head. And the rest. And all the rest.
You don't need me to figure these things out. And besides, most people are way ahead of me.
But what happens as a result is that you gave up on the Vayovek Yishimo Aram Rashachar. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I tell you something, even if you didn't become a doctor or a lawyer, it wouldn't be worth it. It's just not worth it. It's not worth it. Because in the end, it's me and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's all that matters. And if a person wants to be a doctor, I'm going to say something. If he really wants and needs to be a doctor, which is a big suffix why you have to become a doctor, but if you really want and need to, and you have an exam, you take your time off and study for that exam. And if a person becomes a doctor and he has to review and study to keep up with the latest, and otherwise he may kill his patient because he doesn't know the consequences of this medication or that, or he isn't on the cutting edge if he's a person that's a specialist, so then you're not being true to your patients. You can't say, I need to learn 4 hours a day. If you have to practice and study and you have a practice and you have to study on your spare time and you don't have any spare time because you're in the base medrash, what kind of business is that? So then don't be a doctor. And the same thing with everything else. I can't take off an hour and say and do daf yomi unless I get his approval and permission. What do you mean you're learning Torah? What do you mean learning Torah? B'chol koichi avadat yisavichem. What are you talking about? There's a whole different orientation. Obligations are obligations. Responsibilities are responsibilities. A word is a word. A contract is a contract. Life is life. Can't say, I'm a ben Torah and life is not life and contracts are not contracts and I'll do it my way. Because in the end, everything will be okay. And meanwhile, I'll have my Torah as well. There's no such thing. That's the price that a person pays for making those kind of decisions. You don't want to pay that price? Don't become a doctor or a lawyer. Sit and learn in the base medrash and starve a little bit. Nothing's going to happen to you. And for those people who make that decision, of course, that's glorious. That's my man. But there's no such thing as baloney. The Ribbono Shel Olam's not interested in baloney. He's not interested in fraud, and he's not interested in sheker. He's not interested in cheating, and he's not happy with the person who cheats. Because he doesn't have to cheat. It's not b'chayra, and it's not bracha. It's just your dreams and your visions of who you want to become. That is of no consequence to the Ribbono Shel Olam. In the face of a failure of integrity and consistency, and if a person has that perspective and that agenda, and he's true to that agenda, he's mekadesh shem shamayim wherever he goes, even when he doesn't even realize it. You tell the person behind the counter that they made a mistake in counting, and that you really owe them another quarter. Big deal. Kiddush Hashem. Because people don't do that. People don't care enough. But you know, Echil Hashem extends to the most little things. You cut the line going to the Brooklyn Bridge on the East River Drive, and there's 50 people that see a Jew with a beard outmaneuvering them while they're waiting patiently. Ein lecha chilul Hashem gedol mitzu. You double and triple park on an avenue, and the guy is trying to maneuver his car, and he's scared out of his wits that he'll either scratch his car or scratch somebody else's car, and you are making him miserable, and he sees that laden with packages, you know, for Shabbos, we'll cover Shabbos, of course, I mean, what else is it? You know, you have your chalas and your chicken for a meal mart or whatever it is, and you're getting into your car, and he says to himself, that's a Jew. Doesn't give a hoot about anybody else. Just thinks only of himself. Chilul Hashem. So that's thinking, it's a nonsense episode, is it not? The whole Shabbos is not worth, and his Shmira Shabbos is not worth that moment of Chilul Hashem. I'm not suggesting you should therefore become a Mechal Shabbos as well. What I mean to say is that you think that you're, you know, Shabbos. Bechlal, the ability not to care about somebody else is such an unbelievable corruption of nature, of the nature of a Jew, that there's something very wrong here. You got warped, I don't know by what, but if you can do that, you're a warped Jew. You're not a good Jew, but you're also a warped Jew. How did that warping happen? Which school did you get that warping from? Where did they fail? Who failed? Your parents failed, your Rebbe failed, your Menahel failed. Who failed you? It's mind-boggling. And on and on and on. But you don't want to pay taxes. You'll take cash and we'll forget about the tax. The Kleinigkeit, the whole world does it. Not a Yisrael Shab Chabas Bar person. So what are you, some sort of a Yekke? You know what that means, a German Jew? You know, somehow the German Jews were straight. Straight as an arrow. Yeah, I'm a Yekke. It's called being a good Jew. It's called being a good Jew. That's as simple as that. It's being a good Jew. And somehow, I don't know, we threw the whole of Choshen Mishpat out the window. In general, Din Tyrus, you can't believe what goes on. And who says they ever get to Din Tyrus and then they take them to court and the person's mamish willing to tear somebody to shreds for money. Money, that's all it is. It's money. Money is a tool to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the same thing all over again. That's all it is. And if it's anything else, it's not right. There's nothing that is outside of the box of being an Eved Hashem. Nothing. There's nothing in life. And therefore, Kiddush Hashem is the name of the game. And that's Yaakov and Yisrael. The number of times that we are permitted to use Yaakov methodologies today are few and far between, but they do exist. If somebody could somehow outmaneuver Iran, that is definitely an opportunity to do so, then it's kedai to do. And if you have to kill somebody by blowing up his cell phone and he has to be killed, he has to be killed. Because he's going to destroy you and habo lahargecha hashkem lahargo. And there is such a thing as mochama. And in mochama, there are taksisei mochama. And in taksisei mochama, sometimes it's b'meisharim and sometimes it's b'akifim. But you can't do that in business because business does not allow you for that. It's only war that allows you for that. That's the difference. You can't wipe out somebody by outmaneuvering him and convincing him to buy a stock. That's lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. You have no right. Because that way I'll have more money because you'll have less money, or my company will succeed because your company will have to close. Where? What? And where's bitachon? You can't spit in a Rebbe Shlom's face and expect success. You may make a lot of money and you think you're successful, but that spittle is going to go a very long way, either in Olam Hazeh or in Olam Haba. Many people became wealthy and their lives were cut short. Many people became wealthy and their children went off the derech because of the wealth. You never know what success is because we are so limited and so blind and so narrow. And we certainly don't know what goes on in the Olam Ha'emes, where things are measured very, very different. So when you take all of that into account, you have, there's a lot to think about. Each person has his moment of truth, if you pardon the pun. You know, that moment where he has to encounter himself and ask, am I for real as an Erlich Hayid, as a righteous Jew? Am I really for real? And no amount of Limud HaTorah is going to substitute for integrity. No amount of Limud HaTorah, no amount of davening, no amount of Shemira Shabbos. Nothing can substitute for integrity. Integrity is the linchpin of being a Jew. And that's that Israel still needs Yaakov, but Yaakov can only be used sparingly and only according to the rules. And the moment that Yaakov is used instead of Yisrael, you have what we call today Chilul Hashem. It's as simple as that. And that's why the Pachim Ketanim, and that's where the test came. Oh, you're so big with the Pachim Ketanim. Let's see what you can do against Esau of thousands of years of Golos. And he fights him, and the Tsar has to admit, you know something, your name is Yisrael. So that's what started from Vayetze Yaakov Mibreshava, and it starts earlier when they're still home with the Midah of Yaakov. And if you understand that, you understand that the Midah of Yaakov is not only not a bad thing, but an absolutely necessary thing in its time, in its place, and for its purposes.